Good evening, everyone. This is host Terry Lynn Coop with the Blue Plate Special. And on tonight's menu, we have indie thriller writer Ray Peden, author of the Patrick Granger thriller series. He was a retired engineer from the state of Kentucky and decided it was more fun to be a novelist where he can count bodies, conspiracies, and emotional conflicts while he sips bourbon and watch the river go by. Better known as Writer on the River, tonight I want to introduce you to Ray Peden. How you doing? How are you doing tonight, Ray?
I'm doing great. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. We had just a little tiny technical blip there, but we're back on track now.
Okay, good. I said something witty, but it'll just have to pass us by.
Darn it, I'll have to wait and catch it on the podcast.
Yeah, I can hardly wait.
Okay, I started out, I introduced you as the author of the Patrick Granger series. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
I've always been a fan of the suspense thriller genre, and I know it makes no sense for someone in my profession, engineer, construction, that sort of thing, to be a writer, but turned out a much better writer than I ever was an engineer. And when I retired, I just dived into this thing full blast, and lo and behold, I found a story. I could always write, but I didn't know how to tell a story. And so I spent about 4 years, you know, reading and craft books and novels and going to conferences and just studying the heck out of it, and wrote my first novel, and surprise, surprise, everybody loved it. And then I wrote number two, and they liked it even better, and I thought, maybe there's something to this. So I'm having a ball doing something that I never knew I could do before, and it's very gratifying to have people call you up that you never have heard from, total strangers, and tell me that I've had them glued to the chair for hours on end. So I'm pretty excited.
So who is Patrick Granger, your main character?
Patrick Granger is, on the surface, is an ordinary, everyday guy. He's a retired veteran from the Army in the first Gulf War, and he just came back home and got married and had a child and decided he wanted to get away from all that grit and grime of war and be a human being. And then his Army units called up to go over to the second Gulf War, his National Guard unit. So he goes over there, and while he's there, his wife and daughter are killed back in the States. So he's devastated. Comes back home 12 years later. Things happen, and he gets embroiled in a conflict that he never saw coming. He rescues a little girl from a terrible gang rape. And it turns out that the father of this girl is the editor of our local newspaper here in Frankfort. So those two guys bond,
Frankfort,
being fathers.
When you say
yes.
Frankfort, where do you mean?
Frankfort, Kentucky, capital of Kentucky.
And is that that's your hometown, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I've lived here all my life. So I decided to set these stories. It had to be from someplace. Everybody's got to be from someplace. So I wrestled with it, decided to set these stories at home. And it's been a huge success because everybody loves to see scenes and people and places that they recognize, even if they're by different names.
Go ahead.
So, well, anyway, my novels are they're very interplotted, but they're character driven. And Patrick Granger is a perfect character for something like this. He's not a Jason Bourne type guy who can do anything and is never defeated. He's not a Jack Reacher type guy. He's just a guy that finds some way to overcome obstacles that would challenge the best of us. And I think that's the reason everybody relates to him so well, because he is such a compelling everyday character, and my readers have found that is a wonderful way to get involved in the story. And as you know, that's the key to any kind of a good writer-reader relationship, that intimate relationship between the two. And if you can get them involved in the story and they're not just watching it as they turn the pages, then you've got a good thing going.
So go back to it. When I was talking about this show, I was saying everyone always tells you to write what you know. I'm saying you write where you know. What are some of the challenges of trying to incorporate that into your book?
Well, that makes it easier, believe it or not. And I'm getting ready to write a blog post. I'm not sure where I'm going to put it yet, but it's going to basically be write what you don't know. And the reason for that is it makes you come out of your comfort zone and research and do the proper analysis of what you want to say. And it makes you a better writer if you write what you don't know. But I do like to put local flavor in my stories, and that's kind of made me a little cult hero in Kentucky, because not that many people see an exciting thriller with a lot of emotional depth written in little central Kentucky. And it's been a big thrill for me to do that, and everybody loves it.
So if I picked your book up and I went to Frankfort, Kentucky, I would be able to find the places that you talk about in your books?
Yeah, absolutely.
For example, give me a couple of examples.
All right, in book two, which is Prime Cut, which is about the premises but based on human trafficking, which is a pretty terrible crime that's going on across the country and across the world today, but I actually bring a Mexican cartel to Frankfort, Kentucky. And ironically, Frankfort is, when I did the Frankfort Police Academy, I found out that Frankfort, Kentucky, little Frankfort, Kentucky, is the hub of drug activity in this part of our central United States, because we're equidistant from Cincinnati, Lexington, and Louisville, also from Atlanta, Kansas City, Detroit, Pennsylvania, Fort Lauderdale. Little Frankfort, Kentucky is a hotbed of crime, and we had no idea. So bringing it all home, like, I have the drug lord flying into town, and he has his own private airport in eastern Kentucky. Guy brings you back to Benson Marina downtown. And the guy looks over and says, let's go get a Dos Equis. And the fellow that's driving me says, you won't find a Dos Equis. It's not a Dos Equis kind of place. It's more of a Bud Light kind of place. And everybody loves that. They love when I can take this crime lord out the windy roads of Ball Knob to a remote farmhouse where they've got somebody secreted away. And then the final scene takes place at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, out near the library and archives, which is a magnificent tourist attraction. But that's where the final culmination takes place when Patrick Granger confronts the Mexican kingpin.
And you involve some of the local people in writing and promoting your books as well, too, don't you?
Yeah. My secondary character for the book is the editor of the Frankfort State Journal. And we're a small town newspaper, but I had to change the names, of course. And Patrick Granger's got these resources from his past that allows him to be a real badass when he has to be. But the editor of the State Journal, being just an investigative reporter in his past, he has serious resources to find things that Patrick can't do. So together, these two fathers pool their knowledge and the desire to right wrongs, and they go after the bad guys in both cases. So it's been a really interesting and surprising combination for people, because they never anticipated these two guys would ever get together.
That's very interesting. And you use your local resources, too, to help you promote the book, correct? Like your book launch parties, et cetera?
Yeah, there's a place down on Broadway, downtown Frankfort. Frankfort's about 35,000-40,000 people. But Broadway is our center of activity, and there's a place called Capital Cellars. So I've had both my book launches at Capital Cellars, where I'll buy 15, 20 bottles of wine and several cheese trays, and and both book launches have drawn upwards of 150 people just for the book launch, and that's been a lot of fun. And then as far as the book presentation, the covers, I designed all my own covers because I have a background in design as well. And a local, my former dentist, Gene Birch, retired, and he is a professional photographer of some note in the region. He's really a high-quality, well-renowned photographer. So I got him to let me use one of his photographs from one of his coffee table books for my front cover for the first book. And then another good friend of mine, Mike Barnes, who is a local realtor, he's kind of a studly sort of guy in an ordinary kind of way. He's not Robert Redford good looking, but he's rugged, and he's a perfect Granger. So we all got together, and we took pictures of Mike Barnes in the studio, and then Gene photoshopped Mike into this front cover in the graveyard with holding a gun, which I borrowed from my neighbor. And we got a hell of a cover out of that. And book two, Prime Cut, another friend had an old antique butcher block. So I found an antique meat cleaver, and I looked on Google for how to make fake blood. And we all met one day at a photo shoot in my friend's house. And then we photoshopped all that together with a large picture of Mike Barnes there in the background working. And I think they're kick-ass covers. I really do.
And tell me, you guys had some fun setting that one up. Wasn't there a thing like, you needed more blood?
Well, on the way to the shoot, I actually spilled the blood in the floor of my truck, and it's still kind of smelly there now. The fake blood is basically just sugar and food coloring and some other things, but we just kind of put it all together, and I got blood all over my hands and all my arms, and I had a great Facebook time doing that, of course. You know, all publicity is good publicity.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what's more fun than trying to, worry about if you have enough fake blood while you're doing your photo cover shoot?
Well, I just happen to think I still have some fake blood in the refrigerator. I might need to throw that out. It's been about 2 years now.
I'd throw it out if I were you.
I don't know. I might make a little bourbon drink and add it and see what happens. Well, whatever. We'll see. That'll be after the show.
So even the production of your books can be kind of a community affair. Am I right?
Yep. And I've had a really good PR response from the local press. And one thing that's been really interesting is I have a pretty strong Facebook presence. And I do for a particular reason, because I want to keep my name available to the public for the book. And also because I'm a single guy, so that's a way I generate some kind of social activity when you're just a lonely hermit rider on the river with nothing to do with your life. Kidding, of course. And
for you.
For me, I know it's terrible. But I have met so many people through Facebook by virtue of being an author. And we have something downtown in the summers, it's a concert. I could walk through the downtown concert before I started writing and might not know 30 people. After I wrote my first book, I would have people come up to me that I had never seen before, or that we had avoided each other, not intentionally. We just never, I loved your book. I really like this. I really like that. And I made so many friends by virtue of this journey as a writer. And that's been a side benefit that I never, ever anticipated.
Now, let me ask you, if someone else who's out there had written a book basically about their hometown, set it in their hometown, would you say that part of your success was, A, in incorporating your friends into the production and promotion, and then doing promotional activities locally?
Well, by using local scenes, that wouldn't impress somebody who lives in Kansas City, but it really has a strong positive effect over people in the Kentucky area. Mm-hmm. And everybody in town knows Gene Birch. They know. Matter of fact, we've had a lot of at all of my book launches. I've had Gene and Mike both there. They draw as many people as I do, so it's kind of a collaborative effort.
So Mike, who plays your Patrick Granger, he's become a little local cult figure.
Yeah, and actually, Images Modeling Group in Lexington signed him shortly after he did the cover. Now he's getting a lot of gigs based on, not just on the cover, but the cover's been a really good promotional thing for him for his new modeling career, even though he's a realtor. So we're all having fun with it.
And that's what I'm getting down to is basically, you know, making it a community effort and having fun with it. Using your friends
and
as resources.
Yep, that's true. And now I've finally got my website developed. I still have more work to do on it, but I finally got it produced. And I've got a book trailer on the website that another here in town helped me produce. I grew up in Frankfort, went to Hollywood to become a screenwriter, came back to Frankfort.
Slow down, you're breaking up a little bit. Go back about your trailer is on your website.
All right. And the fellow who produced it for me, he is a screenwriter, born and raised in Frankfort, moved to Hollywood, came back to Frankfort, and he's produced a couple of small movies of his own. And he agreed to produce my book trailer for me for a very nominal fee. And so we went out and shot photographs and videos on the back roads. And I borrowed a couple of weapons, automatic weapons from my chiropractor who's got an arsenal at his house. And it's just been a blast to try to put all that together. So if anybody wants to go to my website and look at that book trailer, I think it'll be pretty it'll be entertaining because it really tells the picture of Prime Cut.
And what is your website?
writeronTheRiver.com.
Okay. All right, so that's writeronTheRiver.com.
Correct.
Okay. So what's up next for Patrick Granger?
Well, I self-published my first two books because I didn't know if I had the chops to be a writer. Now that I've found such a good, constant and steady and uniform response from so many hundreds of readers, maybe thousands by now, I realized that I can tell a story. There's a difference between being able to write and being able to tell a story. And I've learned how to tell a story. I've learned how to follow the rules of structure. I've learned how to create a compelling character. I've learned how to keep a reader involved in my story. I've learned how to raise questions with no answers, which basically creates a pivot point between you and the reader, and they just have to read another chapter to find out what the hell you just did and why did you do it. And the psychological game between writer and reader is very interesting, and I love it. So now that my first two books have been self-published, I've decided to, on book three, which I'm pretty confident is going to be the best of the three, called The Bourbon Conspiracy. And I'm going to go ahead and get an agent and a publisher and go national with that one. I think it's going to be a big deal. The Bourbon Conspiracy is going to be a difficult story because I'm going to tell it in two time periods. One, current day, when a developer comes to Little Frankfort to build the world's largest distillery. And another time period, back in 1880, right after the Civil War, when all the Kentucky bourbon barons were competing for supremacy, and something happens back then, something terrible, that changes the course of history for this one distiller. Well, it's all covered up until seven generations later. And now what happened back then throws a serious monkey wrench into this developer's plans now, and all hell breaks loose. And, of course, Patrick Granger just has to get involved.
He just happened. All the guy wanted was a drink, and he gets involved in this generational conspiracy, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this one. I think this one is going to be the best of the three, like I say. And I've had so many people who have loved the graphic storytelling that I did in books one and two. I don't mean graphic, disturbing graphic, but it's easy to see what's going on. I found a way to really paint the right word pictures. And everybody felt like books one and two would have made a great movie. So I decided if I can learn to write a novel, I can learn to write a screenplay. So I'm in the process of writing a screenplay for books one and two. And
interesting.
Taking courses in that online with a outfit called Udemy, U-D-E-M-Y, which is you can buy courses in just about anything. And I bought four courses for how to write a screenplay. I bought a software program for how to write a screenplay. And if I can be a skilled novelist, I'm pretty damn sure I can be a skilled screenwriter. So we'll see where this goes.
Absolutely. Are you finding it to be a different process?
It's a totally different process in the sense that the format is different. But the rules that apply to novel writing also apply to screenwriting, which means you have to have your four acts. You have to have your structure that's the same as for a screenplay as it is for a novel. And Larry Brooks wrote a wonderful book called Story Engineering that taught me about story structure. And so a screenplay also has to have those four quarterly points. You have to have the setup, which is the first quarter of your book, same way the first quarter of your screenplay. Then you have your response, which is the second quarter. And you have your attack, which is the third quarter. And you have your resolution, which is the fourth quarter. And the same principles apply to screenplays that apply to novels. It's just a formatting difference. And I've already learned all those principles. So finding a way to put them in the right format is not going to be that difficult. And I'm looking forward to that big deal.
Well, in the meantime, tell me a little bit about who you are reading. Who do you recommend?
Who am I reading?
Yes.
Well, because I'm not smart enough to write simple stories, they're all pretty, not convoluted, but they're pretty interwoven tales. I have to do a lot of research on my stories. In my first book, I had to research all the conspiracies and fraud things that took place over in Iraq by our defense contractors who basically ripped off the American people for trillions of dollars, and we've left all that over in the sand. Book two was about human trafficking. I had to research what human trafficking was all about, and which is a very disturbing bit of research, but interesting as well. And book three, on the Bourbon conspiracy, I've gone through seven books on the history of bourbon. I've got four more to read. And the way I do it is I will read the book, underline the key passages that are pertinent, then I'll go back and outline what I underlined, and then I'll take that and put it into a general outline before I start writing. Now, I know some people like to be pantsers, and they claim that's the best way to go. I like to start out with a general outline and then let the pantsing take place. And everything I've written has a direction to head, but I'll be in the middle of a chapter and all of a sudden my characters will start doing something different. And I just have to start writing down what they do, and usually it's a lot better than what I had dreamed up in my own mind, which is the same process that Stephen King talks about in his book On Writing. So it's a very fluid process that you really can't hold back. The characters
isn't it fun
story.
When that happens?
Do what?
Isn't it fun when that happens?
Yeah, and I hesitate to describe one chapter because it would give it away, but I had one scene where Patrick Granger confronts the third rapist in a deserted barn, and he knows he's just got to kill this guy and put a bullet through his head. But as they confront each other, he starts doing something differently that I did not even anticipate, and it was so appropriate for the crime. And then Patrick dispatches this guy in a way that I would never have dreamed of. And I had no idea it was coming, but when I asked people later about that scene in the book that had bothered them, they said, yes, that son of a bitch deserved it. And they love what Patrick Granger did, and I had no clue what he was going to do until I started getting into the last two or three pages of that chapter manuscript.
So you said, talking about your fans, with being able to have a local fan base like that, you say that people stop you in public?
Yeah, I mean, I knew my friends would buy the book, and they would politely tell me they liked it or ignore me or try to avoid telling me they didn't like it. But I had no idea that so many strangers would pick the book up, read it, and then out of the blue call me. People that I didn't even know would call me and say, Mr. Peden, I'm so-and-so, you don't know me, but I just finished your book, and I read it in two nights, and I could not put it down, and it's the most exciting book I ever read. And I try to be humble about it, but secretly I'm just super excited, because when a writer can entertain a reader like that and keep them hooked, that's the ultimate compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, you finish. No, finish up your thought, please.
No, I'm just saying that people who had no reason to compliment me on a book, when they do, that means a lot more than just if my mother would say, "Oh yeah, that's really nice, son." So I've enjoyed all the unsolicited compliments that I've gotten so far, and the comments that I get are pretty uniform. They love the character. They all say they had the plot figured out until chapter 36, and all of a sudden they realized they were thinking completely differently, and I took them in another direction, and they thought, "What the hell is he doing?" And then they have to read some more. So it's by that time it's 12 o'clock at night, and they page forward and see there's only four more pages in the next chapter, so they'll read that one. And 3 o'clock in the morning, they finally just have to quit. So I've had a lot of people who have read it in two nights because they just could not find a stopping point. And that was intentional, of course, and didn't know I could do that. But when you can create that kind of excitement with a reader, it just makes you feel great.
So to summarize this, your first book was One Tenth of the Law.
Right.
Which I happen
to
know for
why.
A fact.
Okay.
Well, which I happen to know for a fact was a finalist for a pretty major award, the Claymore Award at Killer Nashville.
It was, and I think I should have won, but the person who won it probably deserved it.
Hey, look, yeah, I know. It is, you were robbed. And
I was.
For anyone who's listening, how I met Ray was I actually beat him for the Claymore Award that year, so he was robbed. And then your second book, Prime Cut, is also a Patrick Granger mystery or thriller. And coming up next, it's going to – go ahead.
I decided to enter Prime Cut in the Killer Nashville Silver Falchion Award, which is given to books that are published that have already been published. And I was shortlisted for that, get down to four of us. And I thought, sure, I had it, but the lady that won it, when it was over with, I put aside my deep disappointment and congratulated her, and now we're good friends. So it's all a good thing. But to be shortlisted among several hundred people to the top four, that was a win for me.
Definitely. And then coming up next, what was the name of it that's coming up next?
The Bourbon Conspiracy.
All right.
It's going to be a dandy. It's going to be a dandy.
And listeners, if you want to learn more about Ray's books, you can go to his website, writeronthriver.com. Or especially all you lonely ladies, you can check him out on Facebook, because he's usually hanging around there, either at his personal page or at his author page. So I want to thank you for coming in tonight, Ray. It was great talking to you about the Patrick Granger books. And will you come back when the new book comes out?
Yeah, I hope so. If I get invited back, I'll be glad to be here. It's been a ball talking to you, Terry.
Well, if you behave yourself, you'll get invited back. So
I'll be able to come back. Maybe I'll be able to come back with a screenplay too. Who knows?
Well, that'll be great too. No, seriously, I look forward to hearing more about the new book when it comes out. And I just have a couple of housekeeping announcements I have to make here. The first one is that this broadcast is owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And you can follow the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to keep up to date with the hottest authors coming fresh off the grill. And next Friday, we're going to be having a special lunchtime edition of the Blue Plate Special. I will be welcoming romantic comedy sensation Tanya Fenske, and it is sure to get naughty if Tanya's on the phone. So please check in with us next week. But after that, I'll say goodnight to everybody, and thanks for tuning in. Take care now.